You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU and 88.5 WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. Time to check in with Cincinnati Observatory Outreach Astronomer and Cincinnati Edition contributor Dean Regas. Looking up this month with James Albury from New Mexico's Kika Silva Pla Planetarium.
Well, good morning. Thanks for joining us, James.
Good morning, Dean.
Now, I always tell people that astronomy is more of a lifestyle than a career. So tell us, what's it like being a planetarium director?
Well, one of the nice things about doing what I do is I get to share my love of astronomy with a lot of people. And planetariums are a great source of astronomical outreach because, unlike some of the sciences like chemistry and geology, there's not really a place where you can have dozens of people come out and learn about anything new in geology or new in chemistry. It's kind of all tied into whatever's going on and I guess the media or whatever. Like you go to museums and you can see a geology exhibit, but there's so many new things that are happening in astronomy, people can learn about them and go to a planetarium and find out. For example, if there's an eclipse coming up or maybe even a comet coming by, people say, oh, I heard about it on the news, and they go to the planetarium and learn more about it. And also astronomy is one of those things that everyone can participate in because all you have to do is go outside and look up. And if you have a small telescope or binoculars and you can get far enough away from city lights, you can see all sorts of wonderful things in the sky. And I think that's one of the reasons why astronomy has been so popular over the centuries is because every culture in the world is able to participate. And every culture has its own stories and legends about the night sky. And I just love being a part of that, directing a planetarium. So we can do all sorts of different multimedia shows in our planetarium that talk about the current topics of the day. And like the transit of Venus, for example, that was a wonderful event for us, even though it was overcast.
Oh, you were clouded out. That's right.
Yeah, but we were able to tie into the internet, and we had a live feed in the planetarium, so we projected it on the dome. So as the people came in, we had about 300, almost 400 people show up that day. So we had two venues here on the campus of Santa Fe College. One of our professors, Dr. Sally Hoffman, she had a lecture hall over in Building X, our natural sciences building set up, where she was talking about the transit, and then folks would come to the planetarium, and I was talking about the transit, and it was a lot of fun. We even showed episodes of Stargazers where we talked about the transit, you and I.
Well, so what visual effects have really been coming into favor now in planetariums? I mean, I always like the live shows, too, but what are some of the cool special effects that are coming in?
Well, as the as technology has improved over the years, because traditionally planetariums were the star ball that was in the center of the room, and you could project the night sky viewed from the surface of the Earth, and any point on the Earth you could do, and now planetarium projectors, the optical mechanical ones, are so sophisticated that you can enter in any date in history in any location in the world, and it'll automatically put the planets and stars where they are. But with the advent of digital projection, you have a lot of planetariums now that are switching to the full-dome digital projection, so now you can simulate things that you couldn't simulate with the optical mechanical, like proper motion of the stars. Like as time passes by thousands or millions of years, you can actually see the stars moving with respect to each other and the constellations we're familiar with distorting. You can also travel physically from one planet to another, so you can take off from the Earth and fly out to Jupiter, orbit Jupiter, look at its moons, and you can orbit to go to Saturn, fly into the Saturn's rings, and fly out of the galaxy, so you can see how big the galaxy is and how small everything is and how it's shaped like a spiral, and you can do all sorts of things. And then a lot of the planetarium show producers, they're making shows that may not even be astronomically oriented. They may be talking about the ocean or about geology or the human body. So you can actually turn the planetarium into an immersive laboratory, as it were, where people learn about a variety of subjects. One of the shows that we're showing here at our planetarium is Tales of the Maya Skies, which was produced by the Chabot Science Center, and it talks about the Mayan contribution to astronomy and how they used astronomy to tie themselves to the universe. And they talk about Chichen Itza and how they aligned their pyramids and temples with the rising and setting locations of the sun, and how they studied Venus quite intensely, and they were able to add, when they built the Caracol, which is their observatory of Venus, they aligned it so that the windows would actually point in the direction of Venus as it was making one of its many retrograde loops over the period of 8 years that it does that.
So it's really essentially can be used as a giant big screen TV too by other sciences, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for people who've never been to a planetarium before, particularly the younger audiences, like the little kids, I tell them, you know, it's a lot like a movie theater, except instead of being square, it's round, and instead of everything being projected in front of you, the entire ceiling is a projection screen. And I like to tell the kids that our projection screen in our planetarium is the largest projection screen in Gainesville. It's like 1,800 square feet. And it's a dome. So if you turned it upside down like a bowl, you could put over 280 million M&Ms in it. And you know, I like M&Ms.
That's right. And of course, the seats are more comfortable too. I always like that.
Yes, and I often have people who will just drift off to sleep because it's dark and it's air conditioned and the music is really mellow. So every once in a while, you'll hear someone belt out a snore or two, even though you try to. You try to keep the show interesting, but it's tough sometimes to, particularly after lunch, to stay awake in a dark room.
Well, I'm speaking with James Albury, who is the director of the Kika Silva Pla Planetarium in Gainesville, Florida, and has recently taken on a new job as a co-host of the PBS show Stargazers. So I'm very curious to get your impressions on being a stargazer. I mean, this was the show that, you know, kind of appears in the middle of the night or strange hours and was started by the very memorable Jack Horkheimer. How did that get involved? How did you get involved as a stargazer?
Well, it's quite an interesting story because I used to watch Stargazers back when it was called Star Hustler. I grew up in Miami, and the planetarium in Miami, the Miami Space Transit Planetarium and the Museum of Science, Jack Horkheimer was the executive director at that planetarium. And he started doing a show on our local PBS television show called Star Hustler, where it was kind of, I guess you could say, hustling the stars, trying to sell the stars and the cosmos to the general audience. And his basic theme was to get outside and look up, you know, kind of turn off the TV set and just look up at the night sky. And his passion and enthusiasm for astronomical outreach was so, I guess you could say, infectious that those of us who watched the show, we were really encouraged to go outside and look at what's up, and we'd go to the planetarium and see what shows they were showing that week. So Stargazer has been on the air now from its original form for over 30 years, and with Jack passing a few years ago, we had noticed that I was just searching on the internet to see if we were still doing the show, and we had guest hosts on the show, and I saw you do one of the episodes, said, "Wow, he's quite energetic."
Yeah, if I can do it, you can do it. That's for sure.
Yeah, so I was contacted by one of the producers, Bill DeShong, and I said, "Hey, would I be able to guest host one day?" And he said, "Wow, well, that would be kind of cool. Go ahead and send us an audition tape, I guess it were." So I had done an interview with our local television station, TV20, about the lunar eclipse on December 21st of 2010. And they liked me, so I came down and did the episodes for April of 2011. And they liked me, and so I alternated back and forth with Dean Regas. Oh, wait, that's you. I alternated back and forth with you for a few months, and then they announced that we would be co-hosts together. And then Marlene Hidalgo has joined us. So it's one big, happy, stargazing family.
That's right. And so, you know, I mean, we go through all sorts of things. I mean, they flip us around, they throw us through space, all that kind of stuff. what's your favorite part about the show? I mean, you get to write some of the shows, you get to edit some of them, the acting. What's the part that you like the best about them?
I would say the makeup, but
the makeup, yeah,
because they have to put makeup on the top of my head so it's not so shiny. But actually, I always thought because when we're doing the episodes, we do them against a green screen, so we don't get to see all the special effects they're going to add. So when the episodes are finally produced and put online on the website, I go and I check and I look to see what we look with the special effects. And it always amazes me how much detail and how good they are with depicting some of the things we're talking about in such a nice way that if a person's watching this, because I've received emails from teachers saying that they show the episodes of Stargazers to their classes, particularly when we had the transit happen back in June of 2012. They would use that as their lesson, or, you know, at least to reinforce what they were talking about. And our episodes are in 1 minute and 5 minute snippets. So if you wanted to go into a little more detail, they show the 5 minute. If you wanted to give them a quick and easy lesson about what's going to be up in the night sky, you use the 1 minute. So I like that particular aspect of it. And also being able to write the episodes, because I'm currently writing the episodes for the next 2 months that we're going to be taping soon. And I always like to think of all the different subject matters we could talk about in the night sky, because you have to be careful, because you don't want to talk about stuff that people can't see because it's either too faint if they're in a city or something that's below the horizon. So we usually try to stay within, since most of the viewing population for the show is in the northern hemisphere, we usually talk about constellations that are visible usually around the 45 degree north latitude. So it's able to hit most of us who live in the south, like myself, and it also is good for people who live in Canada and the northern United States as well.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you so much, James, for talking with us this morning.
Oh, it has been a wonderful morning, I guess you could say, diversion.
Aha.
Thank you so much for inviting me to talk.
I've been speaking with James Albury, director of the Kika Silva Plot Planetarium in Gainesville, Florida, and one of the co-hosts of the world-famous Stargazers PBS program, available on your PBS station. And for more information on James and the PBS show Stargazers, check out our website, wvxu.org. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Dean Regas, saying keep looking up.